There's one advantage to putting things off till tomorrow, those things which need to be done today. Maybe tomorrow will never come. I was taking a jet from Los Angeles to Chicago. I had a three-hour wait. So I made my way down the long concourse till I got to the loading gate. There was a comfortable chair there. I had a good book. And I sat down to read. There was a jet sitting outside, and the long accordion runway was going out there. Where I was sitting, I could look down the alleyway that went to these entrances to the planes, and I could also look down the long concourse the other direction, way down to the corner. I was disturbed in my reading when I heard all of this laughing. People just having a wonderful time. I began to wonder, what in the world is that all about? So I laid my book down and looked way down there, and pretty soon, coming around and echoing up through the corridor, were a group of people, must have been, there was a group, about 30, 35 of them, I imagine. And they were having so much fun and doing so much laughing. I sat there wondering what it was all about and trying to figure out my mind. And pretty soon I had it put together. There were two ladies that were going to go to New York. And they were dressed up beautifully, fine coats, corsages, nice hats, pocketbooks, everything. And I gathered that Uncle Joe was going to pick them up at Kennedy. Be sure and tell Aunt Harriet hello and several other relatives. So as they came just opposite where I was, there was the man over there, the ticket agent. And as they came up, he said, "Could I have your tickets, please?" And so they were still talking and laughing, and they were rummaging in those... How do women find anything in those bags anyway? Have you ever figured it out? I never did. At any rate, they were rummaging. Finally, they came out with the tickets, and they handed the tickets to him and went right on talking and laughing. And he took out the right ticket, and he said to him, "You can board now." I distinctly heard him. "You can board now." No one seemed to be interested in doing anything except talk. And they stood around there talking, and pretty soon they filtered into this waiting area. And they stood there talking, and I thought, why don't they get on the plane? I began to worry, because outside I could see the man with the three stripes on his sleeve, and he had his flashlight, was looking at the motors and various things. And I had seen him come up the stairway. I saw him get in, go into the plane, because in there I saw him take off his hat, take off his coat, adjust his earphones. Now he's sitting in there and playing with dials, one thing and another. The pilot is already there. And here these people now have all settled down. So I thought to myself, I'd better go over and tell them. Well, I'd probably go over there and say, "Why don't you mind your own business, you know? Maybe I should tell the ticket agent." Well, what do you do in a case like that? I don't know. So I sat there. Pretty soon, to my intense consternation, the outboard motor fires up. And then another one, and all of a sudden I see this long accordion thing leave the plane and start moving back, and it gets back quite a ways, and the door goes closed, and I see the handle flip down. And about that time, the plane starts to move because the man with the tractor is pushing it away from the loading gate, and then somebody happened to look outside and saw it. You ever see 35 people go in different directions at the same time? I never saw so much commotion in my whole life. Running every which way, and the poor ticket agent couldn't figure out what the commotion was, and finally he sorted it out. He said, "Well, what's the problem?" They said, "You got to stop the plane. What for?" And he looked up and saw those women, and you could see he didn't believe his eyes. He said, "But I told you to board. I thought you were on board. I can't stop the plane. It's too late." Finally, he said, "Wait a minute." So he picked up the phone and talked for a little bit, and pretty soon he said, "I can get you another flight. There's another flight leaving 2 hours later." "What about Uncle Joe?" "Poor Uncle Joe. How about Aunt Harriet? That's going to make any good. Do any good. Well, I'll tell you, there wasn't any laughing when they made their way back down the concourse. I watched him. There wasn't a sound. The whole joy of takeoff, the joy of goodbyes, the whole thing was gone because they weren't there. Pretty soon I saw the jet roar off into the air, and they were heading for some other gate where there was another plane leaving 2 hours later. We use two words to indicate a delay in decision or action. The first word is deliberation, and the second word is procrastination. Deliberation, we can say, simply means that we need more information. We need to study different methods or better methods or alternate possibilities or something like that. But deliberation, you must remember, is always the desire to make a decision. Don't forget that one. Deliberation is the desire to make a decision, to accomplish an end, to succeed in something. The delay in action is simply to secure a more favorable result. That is deliberation. In procrastination, we have the result of a desire to delay or avoid making an action or a decision. The objective or decision does not merit further study. The time element is now. We simply don't want to do it. And so we use such excuses as, well, I just don't feel up to it. I'll wait till I'm in a better mood. I'll do it later. I'll get up earlier tomorrow. Well, maybe I won't have to. While deliberation usually results in a feeling of accomplishment, procrastination engenders feelings of nagging guilt, self-disgust, hopelessness, and a defeatist attitude. What are the reasons for procrastination? There are many. Consider this one. Sometimes we plan too many things, too many projects. We should set realistic goals for whatever time is available, and that would prevent this. Then sometimes procrastination is the result of crisis living. Always depending on somebody or something to bail you out. It's a sort of a disaster type of life. Procrastination sometimes comes because we have wrong attitudes. We tend to think of certain duties as pleasant and others unpleasant rather than duties in the sense of one being essential and the other being non-essential. The principle is that any job that needs to be done is honorable and should be accomplished with dispatch and a cheerful attitude. That's the principle. If it needs to be done, it's honorable, should be accomplished with dispatch, and a cheerful attitude. What are the results of procrastination? Well, number one, it'll jam your calendar. The things you leave to do till tomorrow will occupy the things of tomorrow should take. Now you're in trouble because you not only have the duties of tomorrow, the requirements, but you have the ones you left over from yesterday. So it jams your calendar. Secondly, procrastination can be very costly. Regular maintenance, for instance, is essential to the efficient operation of a car, home, or clothes. A neglect to properly maintain your automobile or your house or your car can result in very costly repairs or replacement. For example, keep putting off changing your oil until eventually sometime you're too low. That can cost you. Tune-ups can cost you gas mileage as well as inefficient operation. A leaky roof can damage your furniture inside in the house. Then in procrastination, there is a loss of self-respect, and especially the respect of others who may be affected by it. And there's nothing so disturbing as for you to depend upon a person to do a certain thing at a certain time, and your program depends on, come to find out he hasn't done his. And that throws your schedule out. This strains friendship almost to the breaking point, or sometimes past it. In every principle which God has ever given us, the devil always has a trap set close beside it. Notice the trap set here, a very cleverly baited one. If the devil can get us into the habit of postponing the things in our daily lives which need to be done, this habit will eventually cause us to put off our preparation for heaven until it's forever too late. What a cleverly baited trap. Think of these examples. The foolish virgins. Here they were. They just put off buying extra oil. There wasn't an oil shortage. The station wasn't closed. They just didn't do it. Until the time came when they desperately needed extra oil. Then they said to the others, "Come on, how about sharing with us?" They said, "No, we can't share with you. We only have enough to take care of our own. If we share with you, then neither one of us, none of us are going to get there." In Acts 24, we find the story of Felix. Paul talked to Felix. I was real interested to notice the subjects that Paul talked about. What would you talk to a governor if you were being accused of something and it might cost you your life? What would you tell him? Wouldn't you try to defend yourself or tell him you weren't guilty? But notice what Paul talked about. He talked about righteousness, temperance, and judgment to come. He didn't talk about himself at all. He talked about Felix, the governor. And it says, Felix trembled, and he said, "You go away for this time, and a more convenient season I'll call for you." And I'm reading now from Acts 24:24-25. "At a more convenient season," here's this procrastination bit, "I'll call for you." Well, unfortunately, history records he never called for him. Did you ever stop to think what procrastination cost Pilate? Pilate had everything under complete control. He was the governor. All his word was life or death. He could do whatever he wanted to. When Jesus came up before Pilate the first time, he examined him, and he frankly said, "I find no fault in the man." All he had to do was to say, "You can go your way. There's no problem." That's all he had to do. He had that power, but he didn't. "I find no fault in the man." Then he sent him out and had him scourged. Then he brings him back and says, "Again, I find no fault in him." Then he goes before the people and says, "I find no fault in him." And they said, "Now wait just a minute. This man was working against Caesar. We have no king but Caesar. And if you don't turn him over to us, you're no friend of Caesar's." Because of his procrastination, he moved himself down to where his job was on the line. And he was no friend of Caesar. From being a governor now, he would be a person that was in opposition to the power of control, that was in control. If he had acted immediately, he wouldn't have had that problem. Caesar didn't get into it until he procrastinated. In reality, procrastination is tied up irrevocably with stewardship. It's the stewardship of time. We have been given ample time for all the essential tasks for our daily living, for our spiritual preparation. The devil gets us to procrastinate our spiritual preparation by making our material interests seem all important. Now he's using a double-ended deal. He is getting us to make these seem all important so that we will forget and neglect the spiritual ones. Fear for the future can become a complete obsession. I had just gone up the large steps leading to the Cairo Museum. I was looking forward to that time. When a man came up, an Arab, and said, "You need a guide." And I said, "Well, thank you very much. I don't think I do. I can get along fine. I've been in lots of museums, and I'll be able to get along." And he said, "No, you need a guide." And I was sure that I didn't need a guide. He said I did. And pretty quick, I came to the conclusion I did too. And you want to know why? If I was going to see anything, because every place I looked, I had this Arab's face right in front of me. I turned to the left, it was there. I turned to the right, how he moved around so fast, I'll never know. But all I was looking was an Arab's face. And pretty quick, I decided maybe I did. So I said, well, maybe you've got a point there, friend. And how much? And so we got into the price deal, and after we got down the price down from where he started to where I started, we got it up to some reasonable means. I employed him and paid him, and we went into the museum. I tell you, he was invaluable. We went into a place, and here's a beautiful display, and there were lots of people around. And he said to me, "Would you like to take a picture of that?" And I said, "Well, I sure would, but not through all those people." Oh, he said, "No problem. Ma'am, sir, please just step to one side, you know." And he just moved him one way and moved him the other way. He says, "Is this okay, sir?" And so I focused and shot the picture, and the people all looked at me, wondering who this character is. You know, we move over, "Would you like a picture here?" And if I did, "Please, sir, please, ma'am." And he just moved him out of the way. So he was invaluable as an aid for pictures, no question about it. But we were looking at all of the material that Tutankhamun had, the old pharaoh. And I never saw so much material. Gold bedstead, gold chair, gold throne, gold this, gold that, gold chariot, all. And alabaster and precious stones. Just cases after cases of this stuff. And finally I said to this guide, I said, "Old Tut sure prepared a lot of things for his grave, didn't he?" And he said, "You wouldn't understand this, sir. But he felt that there was so much of the next life in comparison to this life that he should spend all of this life just preparing for the next one." I needed that guide. Because from that day to this, I have never forgotten what he said. There is so much of the next life and so little of this one that we should prepare all of this one just getting ready for the next one. What is the solution to procrastination? Well, so that we won't get into the trap which the devil has set for us, let's think about the practical part of it. A person ought to make a list. My wife is a great list maker. She even makes some for me. I can go out and look on the drain board and I can see a list there, and I know pretty well what she's going to do today. I can't confess that I... truthfully, that I always make lists, but usually I have in my mind what I plan to do for the day. But she has lists. And she goes down these lists in the element of priority. However, these lists must be realistic. This is a very key point. They must be realistic. And we must determine priorities. I have a friend who... really wasn't making much of a success, he said. Asked if I'd drop by his place one time, and I did. And he said, "I have so much to do, I don't do anything. Because I don't know where to start. What should I do?" And I said, "You have to decide what's most important, and you do that. Then what's next most important, you do that. And next most important. And at the tail end of the day, if you haven't gotten to all of them, the ones that you haven't gotten to weren't all that important anyway. They can either, if they were never done, they probably wouldn't make all that much difference. But any busy person has to decide priorities, and he should make a list so that he can keep track of it. Number two, many times we don't start early enough. There's some inspired instruction that says we should awake with nature and the early rising birds. Now, I imagine if we awoke with nature and the early rising birds, we'd get a good start in the day. I used to have a friend. I used to go and see him once in a while. We lived several hundred miles apart. And on the day I was going to arrive there, I would set a particular time when I was going to be there. And only once in all those times did I not have to wait for him. Now, here I had driven almost 200 miles, and I was on time, and he was late. I used to say to him, "You didn't get up early enough." "Yes, I did." I said, "No, you didn't. If you'd have gotten early up early enough, you'd have had this done." I never could convince him that he didn't get up early enough. There's another way to prevent procrastination, and that is to complete each task whenever possible. Don't just do a little one and then walk off and leave it and jump onto something else. A man recently told me that he used procrastination. It was a hobby. He says when people ask him what he did, he said, "I procrastinate." He said, "I have 100 projects. I have never finished any of them." And he said, "I've often always laughed about it, but now I suddenly see that if I constantly do this, I'll never make my spiritual preparation either." And consequently, he said, "With the Lord's help, tomorrow I'm going home and I'm going to start finishing those tasks that I started, one after the other, till I get them all taken care of." You can't use procrastination as a hobby. Number four, don't be a slave to your plans. There are people that make lists. And when they come to the end of the day, they're worn out. They still have something on the list. And they feel like a great guilt complex if they go to bed without finishing it. When you run out of steam, stop. Now, let me give you the authority from this. It comes from a little book called Mind, Character, and Personality, page 376. Do not overwork. Better, far better, leave undone some of the things planned for the day's work than to undo oneself and become overtaxed. Losing the courage necessary for the performance of the tasks of the next day. Do not today violate the laws of nature, lest you lose your strength for the day to follow. You can see how wise this advice is. That when you run out of steam, it's time to go sit down or lie down or whatever will give you that release which you need. Otherwise, you'll just be one bundle of nerves and be constantly frustrated. And it's almost as bad to be constantly frustrated as to procrastinate. Let's study some of the principles of spiritual procrastination. Here's the principle. When Christ commands, his soldiers must obey without hesitation. Delays are virtual defeats. When Christ commands, his soldiers must obey without hesitation. Delays are virtual defeats. Here's an example. Israel was at Edom. The Lord had planned that he was going to impress the king of Edom so that they could go across his highway right into Canaan. They were just a few days away. They could buy food and water from the king. But when he turned off their water supply just outside their camp, which should have been a signal that they were on their way to Canaan, they started to murmur and they wouldn't move. And they moaned and complained until the golden moment was past and God wouldn't work for them anymore. The king of Edom said, "No way, you're not going to cross my highway." So they had to make a very long detour around in the desert in order to get there. The same thing had happened to their fathers 40 years before, right after the spies came back. The time to go to Canaan was right there. They could have saved themselves 40 years of wandering around in the desert if they'd gone then. But they didn't go. They spent all night weeping in their tents. The next day they decided to go, but the time element had elapsed. And God wouldn't work for them. And they went over and got beat up with some of the enemies over there trying it too. So when the Lord says to move, that's the time to move. Think of this from a personal standpoint. One wrong trait of character will eventually neutralize the power of the gospel. One wrong trait procrastinated will neutralize the power of the gospel. The quotation comes from Councils on Stewardship, page 38. Many are quieting a troubled conscience with the thought that they can change a course of evil when they choose to. Can't be done. Proverbs 27:1. Boast not thyself of tomorrow, for thou knowest not what a day may bring forth. Boast not thyself of tomorrow, for thou knowest not what a day may bring forth. I went to college with a young man, and we were real good friends. He was a very fine, quiet fellow. We played in the same musical organizations together. I hadn't seen him for 40 years, I guess. One day I had heard that he was in a little city, and I was staying the night in that city as I came through. And so I made it a point to find him. He really wasn't too hard to find. He was the assistant postmaster. So we had lunch that evening down at the hotel. And what a grand time we had, because we hadn't talked all these years, and we spent time telling each other what we were doing about our families and our work, etc., and reminiscing over old times at college. Finally, after a while, I said, what about you and the church, Norman? Have you come back? No, he said, I haven't. He said, I know I ought to. I plan to. I really do. I'm going to do it. But he said, I've had a problem. You see, in the years that I was away from the church, I married a girl, a real lovely person. She's been a marvelous wife and a mother. I have grown children. We have friends in another church, friends in the club, the country club where we belong. They wouldn't understand. And then he said, but you don't know how trapped I feel. I know what I ought to do. And I said, well, Norman, you just have to do it, regardless of what the cost is. I know it. I know it. I'm going to. I really am. Well, then it turned out that I lived in this area, so I used to see him fairly often. Every few months or so, I would see him, and we'd have lunch together, and I'd say, Norman, have you come back to church yet? No. Well, I've gone a couple of times. I'm going to do it, though. I really am. And then one night, I called him from my motel, and he and his wife came over. She was a lovely person, just like he said. I am not convinced in my own mind that she wouldn't have understood. If he had stepped out and said, this is my conviction, she just seemed like a quality person to me. And so it went on for a number of years. And I'd say, Norma, don't put it off. And then one day, the fellow said, I was just down in the other end of the state. He said, I see a friend of yours died down there. I think he was with his friends. And I said, who? He said, Norman. Norman? Yeah. I said, when? He said, last week. How? He was just on his way to work. He just died, that's all. Years and years of procrastination until one day, was one day too long. From Steps to Christ, page 37 and 38. And incidentally, I gave you 38 a while ago, and that was supposed to be Steps to Christ, not Counsels on Stewardship. So there is a mistake there. This is Steps to Christ. Beware of procrastination. Do not put off the work of forsaking your sins and seeking purity of your heart through Jesus. What we do not overcome will overcome us and work to our destruction. In the Little William Miller Chapel in Littlehampton, New York, there's a motto on the wall behind the pulpit. Kind of in a rainbow type of thing, rather large letters it's there. I always like to go over to the William Miller Chapel. I like to go back and stand on those granite rocks in the back where those people that they erroneously called the Ascension Group supposedly had Ascension robes and so forth, which they didn't. But this group of people had cut themselves loose from all the impediment of this world, and there they stood looking at the eastern sky, expecting to see the cloud with Jesus coming. Sure, they had been date setting. They had the date wrong and all that, but they certainly didn't have their dedication misconstrued, because they had torn themselves loose from the things of this world and were looking for one event. That was the coming of Christ. I'd like to stand on that rock and look off into the eastern sky and think to myself, am I thus put loose from this world so that I could stand here and say, now if the clouds showed up now, I'd say, here's our God, we waited for him, and so forth. So that was always a source of inspiration. In the Little William Miller Chapel in Littlehampton, New York, there's a motto on the wall behind the pulpit. It's taken from Daniel 8, verse 19. For at the appointed time, the end shall be. I used to like to go over to this little chapel, especially did I like to go down that little swale behind it and stand on those granite rocks. This is the place where those people stood way back in 1844, expecting the Lord to come that particular day. It's true that they made an error in the event that was going to transpire at that particular time. But on the other hand, I used to like to think about the fact that these people had turned themselves loose from everything that was in this world and were standing there waiting for Jesus to come and felt that they were ready. And I used to stand there and wonder, if I stood here today and if I looked up and I saw that little cloud, would I be as ready as they? It was always a great inspiration to me that the things of this world being so transitory, that a person should be able to handle them each day so that if Christ came, he was ready. But another thrill to me was to sit in that little chapel where those people sat so many years ago and look at that motto. It's a rather large writing, really. I think the letters must be almost 10 inches high. And it stretches clear across the back of the chapel. For at the appointed time, the end shall be. You know, at that time, Jesus and the holy angels will come to earth on a great white cloud. They'll gather up all the saints and take them off to heaven. How important it is that we keep that appointment, that exact time, for there isn't going to be another cloud leaving 2 hours later. No wonder Paul said in 2 Corinthians 6:2, behold, now is the accepted time. Behold, now is the day of salvation.
This has been another classic sermon from the Archive of American Christian Ministries. International Copyright 2008, all rights reserved. This recording has been digitally reprocessed from the original audio cassette or reel-to-reel in order to make this CD available. The audio quality was improved as much as possible. To order a copy of this or other presentations, or for a free catalog, please call toll-free 800-233-4450. International calls dial 717-652-7000. You may also order from our secure website at www.americanchristianministries.org. There you will discover the largest selection of authentic Adventist preaching available. You can trust ACM. There is no compromise here. If American Christian Ministries has been a blessing to you, why not take a moment just now and send us a note or an email with your testimony? We'll share it with our speakers and volunteer workers to encourage them. Your prayers and continued financial support are very important to ensure the continuation of this ministry as we help prepare America and the world to meet Jesus Christ. He's coming soon.